first, before we even get into it, there's one word in this parasha which doesn't begin in the last parasha. You see, v'haya ki tavo, as opposed to last week, which was ki teitze l'melchama. The v'haya is an interesting word. Oftentimes it connects things or it sort of disconnects things and depends on the situation. We're not going to focus too much on that, but just to notice that although the parsha sound similar, they don't start the same way. We got our backup. Thank you, Jimmy. But what's Kisavo about? So you'll notice the beginning of the parsha is actually very similar, very familiar. What's the parsha about in the beginning? It's all about Bikurim. Bikurim, as we come to the Beis HaMikdash, we take our first fruits. You can imagine a farmer in the land of Israel. So obviously, it's not something that they can even imagine, right? Just like we're sitting here in America, we can't imagine a situation. The Jewish people were in the same boat. They're sitting there in the desert. Moshe's going to tell, I know, you look every direction, all you see is sand. But Kisavo El Haaretz, one day you're going to get to the land of Israel. And it's going to look like sand over there too. But when you start planting, you'll get fruit trees, you'll get all this produce, and then at least according to some of the produce, you'll have to bring them to Yerushalayim. You won't be allowed to have them right away. You'll have to bring them to Yerushalayim during this time, actually, before Sukkot, sometime in the fall. And the Pesukim actually tell us a very interesting whole process. We don't typically have this in other situations, in other mitzvos, but in this specific mitzvah, I have another sheet if anyone wants. In this specific mitzvah, it goes through the entire process, not just what we have to do, the general act, bring your fruits, but also you're going to take it in your hand, you're going to put it in the Kohen's hand, he's going to wave it around, and you're going to say these words, and he's going to respond, and you're going to say more words. It goes through every single detail. And this is what we call vidoy bikurim. Vidoy bikurim is basically what we have to say. You'll notice the word vidoy, right? What does that word typically mean?
Confession.
A confession, right? A confession, when it comes to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, oftentimes comes with a declaration of sin, a declaration of what we've done wrong. But if you notice in this Vidui Bikurim, it's a very different tone. So let's look at source number one, or on page 1068, you'll notice the beginning of the parsha really jumps right into it. You're going to inherit the land, and then you're going to dwell in the land. And you're going to take from the first fruits of your land. Anyone know what a tenet is? A basket. What other words do we use for basket?
Sal.
A sal. We don't use that word here. Okay, so there's something about the word tenet. You should know that there are two instances of the word tenet in all of Torah, and they're both right here. They're both right here in this week's parsha. So so you put the fruit in the basket. Just in my reading of the parsha this week, I haven't gotten through the whole thing yet, but one of my questions here, it doesn't say to bring the fruit. What does it say? Put it in your basket and then walk to the Beis HaMikdash. It doesn't say bring the fruit. It just says, hopefully you're going to hold on to them because you're going to need them when you get the Beis HaMikdash, but it doesn't say bring the fruit. It's kind of interesting. I haven't looked into any answers yet. But you're going to go to the place, Hamakom. We've seen that word Hamakom before, by Avram and Yitzchak, and by Yaakov, by Yifka, Bamakom. And here it says, you're going to go to that same place, also known at that time as the Beis HaMikdash. You're going to go to the temple, and you're going to Uvasal HaKohen Asher Yeh Bayamim Ahem. You're going to go to the Kohen who will be in those days. That's an interesting phrase. What's your other option? You're going to go to Kohen in a different day. You're going to go to the Kohen from 100 years ago. What does it mean? Asher yeh bayamim ahem. So Rashi points out, I think, or other commentaries point out, it doesn't matter who the Kohen is. Ein lecha el Kohen sheb yamecha. Kemo shehu. You're going to have to take the Kohen as he comes. Sort of like a plug and play. You can't change him. Right? You think this Kohen has some bad character traits. Doesn't matter. He's the Kohen. You have to give him a kavod. You have to give him respect. Doesn't matter who he is. And you should say to him, Higadati hayom l'Hashem Elokecha. Interesting phrase again. Higadati is typically past tense. Right, Judy? Higadati. How would you translate Higadati?
I told.
I told in the past tense. But then it says Higadati hayom. I told today. Wait a second. Those two things don't go together. Ani magid hayom. Okay, so another interesting thing we're not going to get to. That I have come to the land, or I came to the land. Kivati, I came, already in the past tense. Right, so that's an interesting phrase. Also, maybe we'll take a tangent to talk about this one. You're saying today that I came to the land Hashem promised us. I mean, you just came today. I thought you had fruit. You've probably been working your land for a while. What does it mean you came today to the land that you were promised? So presumably you can say, and I've talked about this before, and I'll use up another drasha that I'm not going to use, by saying that what presumably this means, or as the way I interpret it, you think about a kohen, you think about a farmer. Farmer living out in the countryside, he's up in Yehupitzville and Haifa or something. Maybe Haifa is too developed to actually have a farm over there. But you can get the picture. You're on a kibbutz somewhere in the north, and all you see is like farmland. All of a sudden, you know, and that's all you know about Israel. You know, this is the first generation of the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu is telling him to go into the land. And he goes, and he's a farmer, and he's making his fruit. And finally, he gets a guts all his fruit together. He says, okay, I'm going to make the trek to Yerushalayim. But to him, he doesn't know right from left. For all he knows, he's still in Europe somewhere. He's still in Egypt. He's still some other place that has farmland. But then when he gets to Yerushalayim, what does he see? He sees not just any old country, not just any place he's been before, but he sees the Beis HaMikdash. He sees the old city. He sees the walls. He sees the Kohanim. He sees the Levim. He sees all of the ritual that goes on in Yerushalayim. And what does he say? He got it to Hayom LaHashem HaKacha. Today I can now attest. Kivasi al ha'aretz ha'shenishba Hashem. This is the land Hashem gave us. Before I didn't notice it. But today I can say, this is Hashem's land. Because it was only once he got to Yerushalayim. Today he notices, he appreciates what Hashem gave us. That's just an interesting drush you could use, put in your back pocket, remember it 5 years from now when I'm going to repeat it. And the Kohen then takes the basket from his hand. Again, interestingly, something that I pointed out before, it doesn't say he gives the basket. It's yet to say that the farmer brings or gives the basket. He puts the stuff in the basket, and then he goes to the place, and now the Kohen is taking the basket from him. I don't know what to think about this yet. Stay tuned, but it's an interesting nuance in the verse. I just realized this here. But either way, and then the Kohen takes the basket from his hands, and he puts it in front of Hashem, your God. Meaning, this is Moshe talking to the Jewish people. And then he will say, or you will say, in front of Hashem, Arami Ovei Ravi, Vayered Mitzrayim, Ve'egresham Imseim Ma'ad, Vahisham Gagadol Tzim Varav, words from? The Haggadah. Really, the Haggadah got it from here.
Right.
But the reason that that's important, the reason it's important to remember that this is what we use in the Haggadah is because this is really a paradigm of gratitude. What we're reading here from the Kohen, from the farmer, is basically the bedrock, is basically the prototype of what gratitude should look like, which is why we use it in the night of the Seder. Right? This is sort of like all of these phrases and all these details are supposed to teach us things about how to be grateful.
When was the Haggadah?
It's not an easy question to answer. I would guess the Gaonim. Maybe before the Gaonim, you have pieces of it, obviously, in the Gemara. But when you look at the Gemara in Pesachim at the end, after, you know, from 100 and on, so you basically see all these discussions, what do we mention, what don't we mention, and it doesn't come to a conclusion about any of it. It says, Rav would say it like this, Shmuel would say it like that, and then we already have in the Rambam, which is the 12th century already, we have his text, which is very close to ours. He's almost line for line. He has his little nuances that everybody likes to talk about at the Seder, depending on what your Seder is like. But the Rambam already has basically the text that we use. So at least by the 12th century, if not the 11th century, I would guess, if I had to guess, if you're going to twist my arm, I would guess the Gaonic period. yeah. But they use these phrases as the blueprint for gratitude. And you should be joyous in all the good things Hashem gave you, It's not just you, but when you're happy, you have to involve the Levi, and you have to involve the convert or the foreigner that's in your midst. Goes through the process. And then you should say, before Hashem, you're in the Beis HaMikdash, biarti hakodesh min habayis. What does that mean, biarti? I've got rid of it, like we have by bior chametz, right? Like we say by bior chametz, to get rid of something. So I got rid of all the kodesh, meaning everything, I've done all my meister, I've done all my truma, now I'm doing my bikurim, I've cleared out everything I have to give away to the Beis HaMikdash. And I've given to either my meister Ani, my meister Sheni, whatever it is, in that whatever year it is. Like all the mitzvahs that you commanded me, lo avarti mitzvosecha, I have not transgressed any of the mitzvos, velo shachachti. What does that mean? I didn't forget what?
I don't know, because if he did them all, then he didn't forget, obviously.
Right? It sounds a little redundant. Lo avarti mitzvosecha, I haven't transgressed anything, and also, by the way, I didn't forget anything. Right? That sounds like the same thing. Right? If I didn't transgress a mitzvah, that means I also didn't forget anything. Otherwise, I would have transgressed it. Right? So either I'm not sure what I'm supposed to know, and therefore I can't say, lo avarti mitzvosecha, I haven't transgressed, or I really did know, and I can honestly say, lo avarti mitzvosecha, I didn't miss anything. So these two things can't work together. They seem to be repeating the same thing. So what does Rashi tell us? Rashi, obviously, the great Pashtan, the one who tries to make sense of the literal words, even though oftentimes he's including within his commentary much of the Midrash, much of Chazal. Either way, Rashi tells us the following in terms of understanding this pasuk. Rashi says, "Lo avarti mitzvosecha" means "Lo hifrashti mimin al she'enu mino umin hacharash al hayashan." I haven't set apart something which is supposed to be taken from one pile by using a different pile, meaning I've used the same produce to absolve the other produce. If you look in the English here, I have not set apart a sacred grain from one species as a substitute for what was due from another species, nor have I separated grain from the new crop as a substitute for what was due from the old one. Meaning, every single batch that you have has to have its own part taken out. You can't say, oh, I like these apples, let me go take from the other batch to give for truma. No, you got to take from that batch. So that's the law of arti mitzvosecha, says Rashi. That's all the farmer means when he says, I haven't transgressed any of those mitzvahs. I've taken the right stuff from the right batches. And then he says, velo shachachti. Rashi tells us, what does it mean, velo shachachti? I haven't forgotten, or I did not forget. Mi levarechecha al hafreshas masros. Nor have I forgotten to bless you on the occasion of setting the tithes. What does that mean? I didn't forget what?
To make a bracha.
I didn't forget to make a bracha. Okay? It would get us out of our problem, right? It would get us out of our question. These two things seem redundant. And then we say, oh no, one's the mitzvah and one's the bracha. But the one question that we have, at least in terms of understanding Rashi, is where in the world did Rashi get that from? Where did he get that from? And just for those of you who like to predict Hasidic drushas, which is a hobby of mine, whenever you have a situation in a pasuk where it doesn't give you the subject or the predicate very clearly, you know there's a Hasidic drasha coming, right? And the pasuk says, lo shachachti, I didn't forget. I didn't forget what? What didn't you forget? You haven't told me what you're talking about. Lo avartim tzich lo shachachti, you told me you didn't transgress the mitzvah, but you didn't tell me what you didn't forget. So this just opens up the horizons for all Hasidic thought to understand what exactly this means. But Rashi tells us, Rashi fills it in for us and says that I haven't forgotten to make a bracha. Where in the world do we get a bracha from these words? I didn't forget. Forget could be a reference to anything. And why wouldn't the pasuk say that? If that's what it means. So for this, we're going to take a step back or a step across. We're going to look at something else. Because I think the answer to that question, or at least the answer that we'll end up giving to that question, is connected to another question. And that has to do something with what we talked about last week, but very briefly. Because last week, what did we talk about? We talked about the Ben Sora Omora. We talked about the Ishi Yifas Toar. We talked about the Bechor, the Ben Asnua. And we said basically from the Shem Yishmuel, from Yishmuel Bornstein, that the common theme of those first three parshios was all about
beginnings,
making the most of your beginnings. The way that you start something off is going to carry you through the rest of that process. And that's why the Ben Sora Umore, it's the beginning of his adulthood, basically around the age of 13, that's when things are starting. The Eishes Yifas Toar, that's the beginning of your marriage. The Ben Hasnua, that's the Bechor, that's the person who starts off your legacy, your descendants. Everything was about beginnings. But the truth is that there's a focus we have to consider, which is even before the beginning. And that is preparing for the beginning. If you look at the next source, the Sifri tells us a very interesting, I don't know if it's a halacha or if it's just a description of what would happen, but the Sifri tells us in source number 3. V'lakach ha-kohen hatena miyadecha. So what does that mean? The Kohen would take the basket from his hands. Mikan amru, from here they learn. The Chazal, rabbis teach us, Ha'ashirim mevi'im bikurim beklasos shel kesef vishelzav, that the wealthy people would bring their bikurim, they'd bring their fruits in what? Klatot shel kesef, baskets of silver, vishelzav, and of gold. V'aniyim, and the poor people, what would they bring their bikurim with?
Straw.
B'salei nitzarim shel arava. They would bring their baskets made of wicker, made of straw. Klufa and folded of hasalim nitznim la kohanim. And the baskets were given to the kohanim. So wait a second, what does that mean? What happened to the wealthy people's basket?
They got confiscated.
Well, it doesn't say that clearly. What does it say?
The Kohanim took them.
The Kohanim, the Kohen took it.
So does he return it? We have no idea.
Right. Well, the Kohen doesn't keep it. What does it say? The Kohen says, it says in Pasuk Dalid, V'lakach ha-Kohen hatena miyadecha, v'hini chol lifnei mizbach Hashem Elokecha. And he puts it down there. But it doesn't say what he did with it. He just left it there. If you look further in the Pasuk, the Pasukim don't tell you anything either. Yeah, it doesn't say what you would do with it. But what's interesting is that the tenet, that the basket that we talk about here, presumably refers to, well, it's unclear what it refers to, but Chazal tell us that there are two types of baskets that used to come to the Kohen. One basket was gold or silver or an expensive basket, and one was a very poor basket. But if you look at the Sifri sounds as if it's saying that the wealthy would bring their baskets, and then the poor people would give their baskets. Right? If you look in the words of the Sifri, it says, Beklatot shel kesef, they would bring the klatot, which is a specific word, I guess maybe a more ornate basket, made of gold and silver. And the aniyim would bring salei, right? They would bring baskets. And what does the end of the Midrash say? Hasalim nitnim lakanim. The baskets, the sal, was left by the Kohen. What about the klatot? The Midrash doesn't say what happened to the wealthy people's baskets. But the salim were given over to the Kohanim. What does that mean? That the rich person who brought the gold and silver presumably got to keep his basket.
Wow.
And the poor person who brought the wicker had to give it in. The Kohen would take it forever.
It's like our tank system today.
Not going to make any political statements in this year. But it seems a little unfair. The poor person gets his basket taken away, and the rich person gets to keep his gold and silver. Sounds like the opposite of what should happen. So now let's understand a little bit, coming back to what we said before, the importance.
Maybe that's to avoid favoritism.
Okay, good. Maybe it's.
And you know, I'm giving you.
Right, maybe you would say.
Everyone's on an equal playing field.
Good. Maybe you would say that the Kohen's basket's going to be taken because he's got the gold and the silver. And if we would take both of them, maybe they'd obviously favor the gold and the silver ones. By the fact that it doesn't take the rich person's basket, so maybe you would think that the Kohen's trying to send the message that we care about the poor person's baskets at least as much as yours. Doesn't matter what they're made of. Okay,
but
good.
Maybe to the poor person, that good. Basket could be just as precious
yeah.
as gold and silver. He has nothing.
Proportionately,
so
it could
have,
be.
Maybe have to work it and have to weave it.
Good,
to make
good.
It. So it's just as
so
precious.
So hold on to that thought. Hold on to that thought. We might come back to it. Let's get back to a bracha for a second. What is a bracha? So we talked about this a few weeks ago when we came, maybe even a month ago or more, about the bracha of Birkas HaMazon. The only explicit biblical bracha that we have is Birkas HaMazon, benching after meals. Right? That's the only one the Torah ever mentions explicitly. It could be that there's another biblical obligation to say a bracha on Torah, which is what we're about to talk about, but that's not explicit, and it's machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban, whether or not that's true. If you look at source number 4, we might have mentioned this by Tisha B'Av. The Gemara says in Nedarim that the Jewish people didn't know why the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. We all know all the different Gemaras about the different reasons, but here's one specific instance of it. They didn't know what happened. Ad shepirshu HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba'atzmo. Pirsho, I guess. And it was only once Hashem explained what happened himself. Vayomer Hashem, says Hashem, al azvam es torasi v'gomer, because they left, they forsook my Torah. Hainu lo shamu bikoli, they didn't listen to my voice. Hainu lo holchuba, which also means they didn't follow the Torah. Rav Yehuda amarav, what does it mean that they didn't walk with the Torah? She'ein mevarchin ba Torah tchila, because they didn't make a bracha on Torah. What's an interesting word there? It could have just said She'ein mevarchin b'Torah. What does it really say? It says b'tchila. It's not just that they didn't say a bracha on the Torah. They didn't say the bracha on the Torah first. It almost sounds as if they would make a bracha afterwards. But the Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim ben Reuven, one of the Rishonim, I guess mid Rishonim era, I think he lived about 1250, 13th century, he says the following, She'ein mevarchim b'Torah tchila, tchilas askam b'chol yom, that the first thing they should do every day, t'hainu lasak v'divrei Torah, v'harevna, v'asher bachar, we know these brachos from the mornings. Davar zen nish'al ha'chachamim. The Gemara says that this question was asked of the rabbis. V'lo pirshu, they couldn't figure it out. Midechziv v'yomer Hashem, al azvam es torasim, mechla deleka diyada l'hadur tama. No one else, the fact that Hashem had to say it, that I destroyed the Beis HaMikdash because you forsook my Torah, means that no one else could figure it out. Elokut Yerichu Bilchud. Umatzas Migal Starim Shel HaRabbeinu Yona. They were close, I think they might have even been related. Rabbeinu Yona was, I think, the son-in-law or cousin. Might have been a cousin of the Ramban. It was a cousin. Yeah, they were related somehow. And the Ran, if I'm not mistaken, was either a Talmud or a grand Talmud of the Ramban, through the Rashba. Either way, so he says, I found in this thing called the Megillah Storm of Rabbeinu Yonah the following explanation. Dikra, dekara hachi daik, dikra hachi daik, da'al shalo barcha b'torah tzchila of the Haaretz, de'im isa al azvames torasi, right, he basically implicitly, let's pause, implicitly the Rabbeinu Yonah asks, wait a second, how did Rabbi Yehuda say that it's about making a bracha on Torah? The pasuk clearly says why it was a problem. Al azvam es Torah si, that they didn't learn the Torah. They left it, they forsook it, whatever it is. They didn't follow the Torah. Says Rabbi Yehuda, no, it doesn't mean that they didn't follow the Torah. It means that they didn't make a bracha on the Torah. Ask Rabbeinu Yonah, how could you reinterpret the pasuk? Like, who gives you the right to say that the pasuk is wrong? So he says, it can't be kepashta. Mashma sha'azvu es Torah, v'lo hayu oskin ba. If that's true, that they left the Torah and they never learned it. When they asked all the rabbis, why did the Beis HaMikdash get destroyed? Wouldn't it be obvious? It's because they're not learning. It's because they're not keeping the Torah. That's a pretty obvious answer. And yet the rabbis didn't know. The Chachamim couldn't figure it out. The halo davar galoy haya, the kalafaresh. It would be easy to figure it out. Elavadai oskin hayu b'Torah. Tamid. Rather, it must be the Jewish people were learning Torah. And it wasn't an obvious thing that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because they weren't learning. They were obviously learning. Then that's why they were asking. That's why the pasuk says, "Alma of the haaretz." Why is the land being destroyed? It's clear we're all learning Torah. We're all following Torah. Maybe not some, whatever. And that's why they ask, "Alma of the haaretz." Ad sheperishu HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba'atzma shehu yodea, because he knew me'omkei halev, the depths of their hearts. Because they weren't making a first bracha on Torah. Now that would also presumably be pretty obvious. Klomar, says Rabbeinu Yonah, says the Ran, quoting Rabbeinu Yonah, Shelo hayisa haTorah chashuva be'eneyem kolkach, sheyehei ra'oi levarech aleha, shelo hayu oskim ba lishma, umitoch kach hayu mezazlim bebirchasa. V'haynu lo holchu ba klomar bekavanasa v'lishma elu divrei harav hachasid zal v'hem na'im re'uyim l'misha amram. I love when the Rishonim talk like that. That they are befitting for anyone who says these words. That they're very significant. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, what does it mean that the Jewish people didn't make a bracha first? Their beginning bracha? What's the difference, and I think we talked about this a month or two ago, between a beginning bracha and an after bracha? In terms of our gratitude, in terms of our appreciation of something, what's the difference? Let's say I'm eating an apple, and I eat the apple, and then I make a bracha afterwards. Why am I making a bracha afterwards?
Because you enjoyed it.
Because I enjoyed it. It was something, I got something out of it. I feel satiated, I feel satisfied. It tasted good. Why do I make a bracha beforehand? Okay, well that's what the Gemara says, that you have to do that in order to make it in order to make it available to you. But what does it represent in terms of gratitude? We're appreciating the opportunity. We're appreciating just the gift that we have to have an apple. We haven't yet gotten any satisfaction from it. Mm-hmm. We've had no physical, tangible satiation. We haven't enjoyed it. We haven't tasted it. It didn't spur any taste buds where we have some sensation in our body. We have no idea what this is. This could be a rotten apple. This could be a terrible food. It could end up being nothing. It could be something we don't want. And we still make a bracha beforehand. That's what the bracha beforehand is, an expression of how much we appreciate something. The bracha afterwards is how much we enjoyed something. That's an easy bracha to make. Everyone can recognize that they enjoyed something and say, oh, that was a geschmack. That was just enjoyable, satisfying. I'm going to make a bracha to thank Hashem for that satisfaction. But the bracha beforehand, we don't even know if we're going to be satisfied. We're just making a bracha to appreciate what Hashem gives us. And the same thing was true in the times of the Beis HaMikdash when it came to Torah. Says Rabbeinu, yeah, they were learning Torah. They were accessing Torah, they were understanding it, they were analyzing it, they were in the depths of Torah. But they weren't Baruch HaBator, Tzchila. They appreciated it, they were satisfied by it. They appreciated it only after they learned. But they didn't appreciate the opportunity before they learned. For them, the Torah was intellectual jumping jacks. It was a good workout. It was a good, you know, math puzzle. And they got satisfied by doing the math, by understanding it, by analyzing it. They got the certain intellectual satisfaction. The problem, however, was that they only appreciated it as much as you would appreciate your social studies textbook or your math textbook or any other piece of information which challenges the mind. But the Torah is not supposed to be some riddle book, not supposed to be some kind of intellectual board game. It's supposed to be something you appreciate because Hashem gave it to you. It's something you should appreciate for its vast depth, for its importance, for the fact that Hashem, His own word, is being spoken through it. That's what they didn't understand. That's what they didn't appreciate. Presumably, we can go back to Rashi now. What does it mean, v'lo shachachti? Says Rashi, it means they didn't make a bracha beforehand. Right? I didn't forget to make a bracha beforehand. I.e., according to this, Rabbeinu Yonah, I appreciated the mitzvah all the way from the beginning. This is not just something I'm appreciating now when I get to the Beis HaMikdash. This is something that even before the whole process started, I made a bracha. I remembered to make a bracha because I appreciated the entirety of the mitzvah. If you look at the Malbim in source, and we'll come back to that in a second. If we look at the Malbim in source number 6, he explains the basket controversy. Right? The controversy which is that the wealthy guy got to get his basket back, and the poor guy had to give his basket in. That's not fair. Says the Malbim, Haketzad. Im hevi batena yikabel hakohen gamas atena vim hevi bishar kelim yachazru lebalim. If he brought it in some little wicker basket, the kohen would keep it. If, however, he brought it with anything else, he would give it back to the kohen. Va'atam amru b'sifri kidei lezakos lehaani perish shederech haani she'ose be'atzmo tena. Who made the poor person's basket?
The poor person
himself. The poor person didn't go down the street to the makolet and buy a basket. He doesn't have money to buy a basket. What did he do? He went out to his yard. He pulled the bark off of his tree. He shaved it down into little strips. He made the weave into the basket, and he had to learn how to make it. He went to a professional. He had to learn the whole trade. He had to make this entire basket. He didn't just have a bunch of baskets sitting around his house. He just picked one off the shelf. No, he had to make a brand new basket. And the fact that he put so much effort into it, Zacha sheyehe tafel lahabikurim v'sheyeh lakohen. The kohen says, I want that basket. I want the basket you put all that effort into. This rich guy who went to his secretary and said, hey, can you go buy me a basket off eBay? Or off, you know, probably not eBay, probably off of, Bloomingdale's. Go to Bloomingdale's and buy me a fancy basket. And the secretary goes out and buys a fancy basket. Cohen says, I don't want that. He just threw some money at it. He didn't even go to the store himself. I don't want that guy's basket. He didn't put any effort into that. This poor person, he spent all day trimming the bark off his tree, learning how to weave a basket, making it into something that can hold fruit. Aval ha'ashirim, lo yasu ba'asmam, rak yiknu. It is a bizoy, it's a disgrace that the rich person, when he has the opportunity to do a mitzvah, didn't do any preparation for it. He didn't do any effort. He didn't put in any effort. He just made a call. He got the basket, shipped right to his door, and he put the fruit in, and then he shipped it across to the Beis HaMikdash. The Kohen doesn't want that. That's a disgrace. Put some effort into it. That's what it means, that the Kohen was taking it, not literally just because it's in his hands, now it's in his hands, but this is the tana that you made from your hands, that your hands were the ones that made this basket. Not like the usher. That would be halakach tana. He just took the basket. The poor person is halakach tana miyadecha. The basket you made with your hands, that's the one the Kohen wants. That's the one Hashem wants. The one that you put a lot of effort into. What we understand from here is that the preparation for the mitzvah is itself significant. Not in just in terms of making sure that the mitzvah is done properly, because that's obvious. That the mitzvah is done properly, of course, you have to take the proper steps in order to make sure that when it's time, when it's game time, when it's time to do the real thing, you'll be ready to do the mitzvah. That's obvious. You have to take preparation to do that. That's not what this is saying. What this is saying is that part of the mitzvah, even if it's not the time of the mitzvah yet, part of the mitzvah is the preparation of the mitzvah. Meaning that the Malbim says, that the basket is being counted as part of the mitzvah bikurim. For the rich person, what's the mitzvah bikurim? Just the fruits. Just giving over the fruits, and then he gets his basket back. For the kohen, for the poor person, the kohen wants the basket too. The preparation is part of the mitzvah, even if it wasn't done during the time of the mitzvah. Why? Because the preparation that came before it is special to Hashem too. If you look at the Sfas Emes in source number 7, we'll tie some of this together. The pasuk v'lo shachachti, perish Rashi, v'lo shachachti milevarechecha al afrashas maestras. Masha tolha bracha bezeh, what is it that he understands the bracha is referenced by the word vishach lo shachachti? Masha tola bracha bezeh ki ikar kiyum hamitzvos la'asoso b'simcha v'yahava. The best or the main part of any mitzvah, as we learn later on by implication in the Tochacha, is the simcha and the ahava that one has, the way you appreciate it. And in accordance to how much a person yearns for that mitzvah all day, l'kaim ha-mitzvos, to fulfill that mitzvah, kach yachol la'asosim be'emes. To the extent that they'll be yearning for it beforehand, that's how well they'll do it in the time that they do with the actual mitzvah. L'chein makdimin bracha el ha-mitzvah, l'haros ha-chavivos v'zeh ha-chana el ha-mitzvah. Therefore, you have to give a bracha before any mitzvah to show how appreciative you are that you are giving value to this mitzvah. Ha'achana el ha-mitzvah. The preparation for it is your expression of how much you care about it. Everyone can come, you know, come to a mitzvah, you pick up the lulav, you shake the lulav, but what did you do last week before you had your lulav? Were you looking at the lulav closely? Were you checking out the more expensive ones to buy? Did you just tell someone else go get it for you? How much did you care about it beforehand? The extent that you cared about it beforehand is going to dictate how well you do it in the time you do it. And that's what the Sfasem says. That's the expression of every bracha we make before a mitzvah. The amount that we concentrate, the amount that we actually have the right kavana and intentions, when we say the bracha before a mitzvah, that's how much we care about the mitzvah. And that's what Rabbeinu Yonah was telling us by the Birchas HaTorah. That when it comes to the Jewish people in the times of the Beis Hamikdash, yeah, they were learning Torah. But the bracha that they made beforehand was not up to par. It wasn't with the correct intentions. It wasn't with that sense of appreciation that even before I feel any tangible satisfaction from the mitzvah, I'm already saying a bracha. They only appreciated it afterwards. Uvezeh, says the Sasem, in the middle of the line number 3 and source number 7. Uvezeh yesh bracha b'hamitzvah v'nishar he'aras ha-mitzvah ba'adam kol hayom. When you appreciate a mitzvah like this, you say a bracha beforehand, you prepared for it properly, nishar he'aras ha-mitzvah ba'adam kol hayom. What's he'arat ha-adam? What does that mean? He'arat ha-adam. Anyone see a word inside that word? Or, what is or?
Light.
The light. This is sort of like a Hasidish way of understanding it.
The
figurative illumination of that mitzvah will stay with the person that the rest of the day. You got up in the morning and you made a good shacharis. You davened well. You davened a good Shemoneh Esrei. You're going to feel that the rest of the day. You lifted up the lulav and you said Al Netilas Lulav and you thought about what the lulav represents. And then you shook the lulav. That's going to stay with you the rest of the day. Says the Sfasem Chumash Kasef Chazal Hamitzvah Shekibul Aleim B'Simcha Adayin Osir M'Simcha. Gemara and Shabbos talks about different mitzvahs that we do B'Simcha. I'm not going to get the details because Machlokes over there. Kain Hu B'Chol Prat. In every single detail, kisha osin hamitzvah besimcha, when you do a mitzvah with the proper joy and the proper appreciation, nishar koach hamitzvah ba'adam la'olam, that force, that power that comes within you, the strength that comes within you, when you do that mitzvah will stay with you forever. Vizeh lo shachachti. That's what it means when we say the words, when the farmer says, lo shachachti, I haven't forgotten it. What does that mean, I haven't forgotten it? I still feel the mitzvah. It's still with me. I haven't forgotten the mitzvah. I might have done the meister, I did the truma, I did all those things a couple months ago when I first plucked the fruit from the tree. But it's still with me. Lo shachachti, I haven't forgotten that moment when I did the mitzvah. Says the Sasemes, She'ein la'adam l'shkoach la'olam chavivus ha-mitzvah. A person, when they do a mitzvah properly, will never forget the belovedness, the preciousness, the serenity of doing that mitzvah. Lo shechachti kodem ma'aseh mitzvah. I didn't forget when I prepared for the mitzvah. I said the bracha properly. Ve'lo nishkach mimeni achar asiyos ha-mitzvah. And also after I did the mitzvah, I didn't forget it either. Ve'zeh inan birchas ha-mitzvos. That's what it means to make a bracha on a mitzvah. The bracha on the mitzvah is expressing how much we care about it beforehand. And when we do it properly, that's lo shechachti. It'll stay with us even afterwards. And that says the Sfasem, it says how Rashi knew, that's how Chazal knew, that the pasuk when it says lo shechachti was a reference to the Birchas HaMitzvah. Because when you appreciate a bracha, or when you appreciate a mitzvah enough to make the proper intentions with your bracha, that's lo shechachti. It's going to stay with you. Because that's an expression of how much you care about that mitzvah. We said last week from the Imre Emes in source number 9, I think we said this last week, that one of the easiest mitzvahs to do, was what? Shiluach HaKan. To send away the mother bird. Why is it so easy? Not very clear. But we talked last week a little bit, why it's easy, how is it different from Kibud Av Em, etc. But how did the pasuk start? Ki yikare kan tzipor lefanecha. Right, what is that? Ki yikare? It just happens to come. Why is that the easiest mitzvah? You don't have to prepare at all. There's no chavivas ha-mitzvah. There's no anything that goes into the mitzvah. You're preparing it all day. You know it's coming. No, it just happens to be there. Says the Netziv in source number 8. In the last tochacha, this week we have the second tochacha. But in the first tochacha, Hashem says, don't walk imi bekeri. What does it mean, don't walk with me bekeri? Don't walk with me in happenstance, by chance. Says the Netziv, Mashmos keri shelo kedaati, without thinking. V'chol hanasa shelo kemo shechashav techila, and anything which happens not in accordance to how you prepared for it, you didn't think about it before, bein l'tov, bein l'ra, whether that thing is actually good or bad, whether it's a mistake or whether it's an actual mitzvah, mechunam b'shem keri. That's also keri, like ki kari kan tzipor. That had no preparations, it's still called keri. And it's still, even though it's a mitzvah. Kimur l'holam, I'm not really sure what that, mem aleph. Mishum shehaba b'mikra, eino b'das machshav atzchila, mishum hachi, anyone who is not thinking of what their friend wants and therefore disrespects them is considered someone who is holich bekeri. They're also walking in happenstance because they don't have the forethought and the appreciation of the other person to properly act with them when they finally approach them. So we have this farmer. He's coming from Yehupitzville up in the north. He brings his fruit to the Beis HaMikdash in this little wicker basket. The Kohen says, I want that wicker basket. That's mine because I know how much you put into it. How do I know how much you put into it? Because the farmer himself says, Lo shachachti. And the fact, says the Kohen, that you now feel the mitzvah, even now you haven't forgotten it, means that you've been cherishing it from the beginning. You made this basket with your own two hands. You took it off the tree, you primed it, you wove it, you did everything yourself. And lo shachachti means that you made that bracha beforehand. Says Rashi, lo shachachti mi levarechecha. I didn't forget to bless Hashem because when it comes to mitzvos, I make the most of them even in the preparation. Even beforehand, I'm looking forward to them, I'm yearning for them. And the amount that we yearn for them, kishem shemishtokek ala mitzvah, says the Sfas Emes, that's how much we'll be able to be mekayim the mitzvah be'emes, as we saw in source number 7. And I think it's obviously something we can all relate to when it comes to this time of year. We've talked about this a couple months ago. When it comes to the month of Elul, when it comes to Rosh Hashanah coming up in a couple weeks, believe it or not, it's right here. It's upon us. Slichos start this Moshe Shabbos. So then the question becomes, what are we doing to prepare? What are we doing to make sure that when it comes to Rosh Hashanah, we'll be ready, but not only that we'll be ready, but that when we make our preparations, that's already starting our mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah. That's already part of the mitzvah. As the farmer brings the basket, the Kohen says, the Sfas Emes says, that's tafel lahavikurim. That's part of the mitzvah. I know you made it 4 months ago. I know that. You didn't make this basket today. You made it a long time ago, but it's still part of the mitzvah. Any preparations that we do now, whether it's a slichos, whether it's looking through the machzer, whether it's making sure we're familiar with the songs, whether it's making sure we have the right food because we appreciate the holiday coming up, all of those preparations, when they're done with a certain appreciation, that too is an expression of the mitzvah and will be counted towards the mitzvah. Even though it's not Aleph Tishrei yet, it's not the beginning of Tishrei yet, Hashem is going to look at those preparations, and just like the farmer gives in his basket, Hashem will tell us that while you're looking through the machzer and you're preparing your food, when you have the right intentions and you're cherishing the mitzvah that's coming, I'm going to take those preparations to be part of the mitzvah. Not just preparations so that when you get to the mitzvah, you'll be able to do them. But they